Craig Button, weekly guest, joins us once again. Craig, how you doing?
I am really good, Jason. How are you today?
Oh, I'm outstanding.
You're in an Irish pub. How can you not be on a Friday?
And they've got all these shamrocks around, man. They're great. It's hard not to be in a good mood. I love it.
Yeah, it is hard to not be in a good mood.
A lot of things I want to discuss with you today. I want to start in the NHL, first of all.
Okay.
If you were the Edmonton Oilers, what would you do with Derek Roy?
Well, you know, I think that he's shown that he can help a team right now. I think he's done very nicely with Yakupov. I will say this. I would consider giving him a one-year contract and nothing more.
Yep, agreed. Because you need some experience. So, you know, I know a lot of people and their suggestions are they're going to wait to see where the draft is, and if they're one or two, that they wouldn't consider that. Well, McKinnon, Stamkos, we can go down the list of elite centermen who didn't play center their first year in the NHL, right? So I don't think Derek Roy signing should hinge on whether they're drafting one or two. What do you think?
Well, I totally agree with you. I mean, again, like, you know, you have you drafted Nail Yakupov first overall, and he had a really good rookie season. And last year, and you know, until Dallas Eakins was let go, it wasn't very good. And now you got Nail Yakupov playing really well again, and I think Derek Roy deserves a real measure of credit for that. And you know, you look at the pick in this year's draft. Who cares? You got Yakupov playing, and you got Derek Roy doing okay with him. You know what? A 1 year contract at reasonable dollars. That's what I'd be looking at. I wouldn't be what you know. One in that old saying about one in hand is worth two in the bush. That's the way I'd be approaching it.
Craig, there's lots of rumblings about Joe Thornton, the San Jose Sharks, being dealt. Do you see him as a fit with the Jets?
Yeah, listen, I've said this for a long time, Jason. I'm a Joe Thornton fan. People say, oh, you'll never win with him. Okay, that's good. Well, if you can't win with Joe Thornton, tell me who you can win with. Are we going to just get to a very small group of players? I'll take my chances with Joe Thornton. He's productive. You know, you put him in a situation where he's got some support around him, and I think that Joe Thornton could certainly be a really key addition and a guy that could really help a good team. Of that, I have no doubt, and I would take my chances.
The San Jose Sharks are precariously in a position of falling out of the playoffs, Craig. And there seems to be just a lot of uncertainty there. You know, the coach stripped the captaincy. They never replaced it with anyone. I don't know if that was a challenge to the players, but it hasn't worked, whatever they've decided to do in San Jose in the regular season. And we all know about the playoffs. What do you make of the Sharks? And do you think Doug Wilson makes any sort of moves between now and next Monday?
You know, look, I think we have to reflect back to last year, and after they had lost to the LA Kings, Doug Wilson, he was very emphatic in saying that the San Jose Sharks are a tomorrow team. You know, they have to find a way to get younger players into their group, and he felt that, you know, that they had to start transitioning some of the responsibility and leadership to the younger group. Well, if we take Doug Wilson at his word, well, then maybe we shouldn't be surprised where the San Jose Sharks are. Maybe he had the exact correct assessment of his group.
Okay.
And now it becomes incumbent upon Doug to look at what other things he can do to help that transition along. I mean, Logan Couture is a good player. Pavelski is a good player. Brent Burns isn't going anywhere. Mark Edward Vlasic. You know, you look at Tommy Wingo's hurdle. I mean, they have younger players in place. So will they consider trading Joe Thornton? I mean, obviously, it sounds like they would. And now they're looking to see what kind of a return that they could get for Joe Thornton. So to me, I think that Doug Wilson is exploring options and exploring where he could make a deal to improve his team for that tomorrow team.
Craig Button from TSN joins us. Craig, I know the Edmonton Oilers, it's very unlikely they're going to get a contract done for Jeff Petrie. And a draft pick to me does really little to help this team anytime soon. They're a prospect who's maybe a little bit more mature, at least can potentially slow that gap from being a four-year gap to be maybe a two-year window. We were a former GM. Do guys value those prospects in the system more than future draft picks? Because this year's draft, though, was deep, how do you think that would play out? What do you think the Oilers' chances are of getting a team to give them, you know, like a maybe a low-end A or high-end B prospect instead of a second-round pick?
Well, I think you have to explore those options, and I think it's prudent. I think if you can trade a player for a guy that, you know, let's just try to keep it simple, was a second round pick and is a high end B prospect, rather than going after a second round pick this year, you've advanced it by 2 years. You know, it's interesting at the trade deadline that draft picks, second round draft picks, you know, move around freely, and then when you get to the draft, everybody wants a draft pick, you know, so you have to be able to act at any particular time based on, you know, what the marketplace is. But definitely, I would be looking at trying to advance the years on that prospect instead of not that a second round draft pick is anything wrong with it, but if you can advance it, then I think that would be the preferable route.
The Winnipeg Jets have a very deep prospect pool right now, and obviously it got a little bit deeper with that trade from the Buffalo Sabres. So, yeah, you know, maybe they're in line to try to get somebody. And let's just play a hypothetical for a second. The San Jose Sharks, let's say they seriously were thinking about it. Who are the two prospects not in the NHL in Winnipeg's system that you're high on the most?
Well, Nikolaj Ehlers and Josh Morrissey. I mean, Nikolaj Ehlers is an elite player. He's exciting, he's dynamic, he's productive, and quite simply, San Jose Sharks aren't getting Nikolaj Ehlers for Joe Thornton. No way. You just hang up the phone and move on, and I don't think they're getting Josh Morrissey either. So, you know, maybe you got to start looking at the next group of players. You know, would they be interested in trading Eric Comrie, Nick Petan, even a Brendan Lemieux, who they just picked up? Would they consider trading an Andrew Kopp, who plays at the University of Michigan? You know, that's the group of players that I think that the Winnipeg Jets would put on the table, because there's no way you're trading an elite talent and Nikolaj Ehlers, and certainly if it comes down to Josh Morrissey, who I think will be a top two, at the very worst, a top three defenseman, I'm not trading him for a 36-year-old player.
Yeah, and that's fair. What did you make of that Winnipeg-Buffalo trade?
You know, I thought that, you know, you look at Buffalo, you know, I think it's 16 or 17 first and second round picks or prospects that they have. I can tell you this, Jason, that all those players are not going to break in at the same time for the Buffalo Sabres. So you have to look at where you can use the players and the picks to acquire players such as Evander Kane. I mean, they wanted to make a switch. It seemed like Tyler Myers, who I think is a good, solid NHL player, and I think the same thing for Bogosian, but they're different types of players, and I think that they wanted a little bit more physical play, so they get that in Bogosian. And, hey, Evander Kane just won the lottery because he wants to play in a more prominent role, but he's going to get a chance to play with McDavid or Eichel. And, you know, that's winning the lottery. And a lot of times we see a change of scenery do a world of good for a player. And I think that could be the case for Evander Kane. And you look at Brendan Lemieux, I think he's a prototypical power winger. Joel Armia can score. He's the first-round pick. And, you know, Drew Stafford, short-term, whether you sign him or not, that's to be seen. And like I said, Tyler Myers moves out. So I think it was a good move for the Winnipeg Jets. I really do. I mean, they had, in their minds, I think, moved on from Evander Kane. No sense lingering on it. They change out the defenseman in terms of type. And for the Buffalo Sabres, hey, listen, you're going to have to make these types of moves to progress as an organization. So, you know, I hate to use the term win-win, but it's win-win based on the situations of both teams.
What do you make of the Boston Bruins right now? Their struggles, you know, they're battling Florida for that eighth and final playoff spot in the Eastern Conference. What would you do if you were Peter Chiarelli?
I wouldn't trade Tyler Seguin. I'm telling you, it's a disaster.
Yeah.
He traded a superstar player. It was an absolute disaster. And I don't care what they say. You drafted him. He was your guy. You know, you can talk about maturity or whatnot. The bottom line is they traded a superstar. And you cannot recover from that. And to me, you know, David Krejci and Patrice Bergeron are really good players. Really, really good players. But they're not superstars. You have to trade one of those two guys. And then they haven't managed their cap very well. I mean, they had Drew McGinley. They had to let him go because of cap. Now they trade Johnny Boychuk, another massive mistake. So you got an older Zdeno Chara. Johnny Boychuk's not there to take some of the pressure off of him, and I think Johnny Boychuk's a unique defenseman. But for me, the Boston Bruins, they made some real blunders along the way here that have put them in a tough spot.
Craig Button joins us. Craig, I got a few texters wondering, when you do your draft analysis, does birth month ever come into play?
No.
No. All right. Simple. You now, how come?
Because I don't care about the birth month. I'm assessing the player's abilities to play in the NHL. Like I said, I don't do birth certificate scouting, and I don't do tape measure scouting. Not what I'm doing.
Now, interesting you mentioned the tape measure of guys, but when you see a small center who's 5'9", and then you see another kid who's 6'2", does that not impact how you evaluate them or no?
If the 6'2" player is better, yeah. Everything being equal, Jason, I'll take the bigger player. Yeah. Unfortunately, rarely is everything equal. Rarely is everything equal.
Mitch Marner, speaking of smaller guys, highly skilled player.
You know, Mitch Marner is 6 foot. I just want to make that point that Mitch Marner is 6 foot.
So the 5'10 stuff's all wrong on all the sites.
He's 6 feet, okay. 160 pounds.
Okay.
That's the official weight from Central Scouting. Not my guesstimate, the official weight and height from Central Scouting.
Now, you've seen him because you and I both know in the hockey world, I've seen a lot of guys in the room that are listed at 5'11", and I'm like, unless they're standing on a book, they're not 5'11". Now that
Well, don't take a beef with NHL Central Scouting then.
Yeah.
When they go in and measure players, which the NHL teams ask them to do,
okay,
and they ask them to be accurate on it, you can doubt it, but take the beef with them. I'm going by their measure where they say it's an official height and weight.
Well, no, I was going to ask you because you've seen him. Is it you think it's a legit 6 feet?
I think it's a legit 6 feet because I think NHL Central Scouting is legit.
What's the best part of Marner's game?
Creativity. Ability to create something out of nothing. And you combine that with unbelievable poise. He's got a patience and a poise with the puck to let plays develop. And, you know, sometimes players are too quick, or maybe quick is the wrong word. They're in too much of a hurry. To make a play. Sometimes the best play is going to occur in 3 seconds. Mitch Marner, he has the poise to wait for that play, and he's got the creativity to see it unfolding.
Right now, today, compare him and Strome.
Well, Strome's a big, strong centerman. I mean, he's the Anze Kopitar, Jonathan Toews type, and I think Mitch Marner's the Patrick Kane type. If I have a centerman on my team, okay, that can do the heavy lifting at a number one center, I'm taking Marner. If I do not have that center, I'm taking Strome.
Great analysis, Craig. That's what I like to hear. And exactly, because you do have to. So now, one last one here, because you just gave me thought. So it's fair to say then that sometimes, because both of those guys you're pretty high on, that you do then have to look at your organizational depth and make a decision that will help your organization not just have all small centers.
Well, yeah, when it's close, right?
Yeah,
exactly,
okay.
When it's close. Like, and I think it's close between Mitch Marner and Dylan Strome. Like, I'm not taking a bigger guy that's not as good as a smaller guy. Like, just or let me change that comment. I'm not taking a centerman if he's not close to the winger.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Because again, you can move centermen along. Yeah, I know this. You can move centers. You can move players if you have good players. Don't take a lesser player based on position.
Yeah, and Marner and Strome, like when we see the rankings and you see a guy in 3 and a guy in 4, like that could be such a slight gap that it's different if the guy's 3 and the guy's 12. right?
Exactly, Jason. And one of the things I always say is don't get married to the number next to it. I always try to get into groupings and say, okay, this group of players, I'm comfortable with this and in this grouping. And I'll be straightforward. When I get into a grouping, you know, if there's six guys in that grouping and you and I are discussing it, and you really think that the guy I have six in that grouping, you should have one, and maybe the guy I have one should be six. You know, if it's close enough in that grouping and the points are made, you know, those are not the areas where I'm really trying to get into heated battles or heated debates, because you can see the points and it's just about understanding what you do. Now, if there's a player that I don't think fits in that group, well, then the debate will be a little bit more vigorous.
Craig, always great to talk to you. Who are you watching this weekend?
Well, I am going to see Kingston at Oshawa on Saturday night. I am going to see Ottawa at Oshawa on Sunday afternoon, and then I am going to see BU and Northeastern Monday in the Beanpot Final, finally.
Finally.
Well, I'm going to see the Edmonton Oil Kings play next Thursday in Lethbridge.
Okay.
Peter Hanholt has done a nice job with the Lethbridge Hurricanes.
Man, he reworked that entire team.
Yep, he's done a nice job. And, you know, Edmonton native Giorgio Estefan, you know, a real high pick in the Bantam draft, he's really found his game down there. He's really, really playing well. And really, quite frankly, that's the guy I want to go watch.
Craig, always good to talk to you, man. We'll do it next week.
We sure will. Enjoy the weekend, Jason, and the Irish pub.
Oh, gotta love the Druid, man. It's great. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Well, when you're in town, you'll have to come down. We'll have a pint.